Okay, this is the hour. We'll take your phone calls with Dr. David Perlmutter. So we'll do that next on Coast to Coast AM. So we were talking about what good is it being youthful looking if your brain isn't? What do you do? Dr. David Perlmutter, our special guest tonight. So, David, tell me, with the ability to look good these days, if you can't keep your brain young, what do you do?
Well, you're in big trouble. And, you know, it's a situation of your body's writing checks that your mind can't fill. And, I think it's a top-down kind of approach that I take. And I think we just spend so much time being concerned about our physical beauty. And, you know, I'm often asked to lecture at anti-aging conferences. And it's interesting when you go there that you see 99% of what's going on there is having to do with looking good. And, you know, the bottom line is that most of these people, at least physiologically, are not in good shape at all. So, you know, there's a lot you can do cosmetically, but at the end of the day, it doesn't really help you in terms of your, not just your lifespan, but your health span, which is to say, aging gracefully and aging in such a way that you remain healthy and full of vitality and able to appreciate your life even as, you know, we enter our 70s and 80s and 90s. And there are plenty of patients I see each day who are active in their 90s and 80s and doing things, and just as many in their 60s who are finished because they didn't take care of themselves. So, you know, we don't generally assume that our human bodies and our brains come with an owner's manual, and I think it's time that we supplied that information to people so that they can be empowered by that. Knowledge is power, and in this case, knowledge is gained by this power of understanding, you know, what are the choices we need to make to keep our brains functioning well and stave off disease.
What are some of the things you recommend that they do first with the Power Up Your Brain program?
Well, even beyond the Power Up Your Brain program, I think that the most important thing a person can do for his or her brain is physical exercise. And that might sound strange, but it turns out that in study after study, cognitive performance improves, risk for Alzheimer's declines, markers of brain inflammation are reduced, markers of brain antioxidant function are increased. So it's just very simple. It's a 20-minute exercise done on a daily basis of an aerobic nature to increase the heart rate. And we typically target a heart rate of 180 minus a person's age as a ballpark, depending, of course, you know, variations based upon what kind of shape that person may be in. But of all the things we talk about in terms of nutritional supplements and meditation and certain foods to eat and those to avoid, turns out that statistically, physical exercise is perhaps the most powerful epigenetic, in other words, modifies gene expression, most powerful epigenetic factor that there is, simple exercise. And it doesn't cost anything. You know, you go outside and walk, put on a pair of sneakers, and off you go. So it's not as if it's some very expensive, high-priced stay at some institution where you're going to get some kind of unique stem cell therapy while you're getting intravenous vitamins and hyperbaric oxygen. Not so. Physical exercise, plain and simple.
Okay, let's go to the phones if we can. First-time caller, Long Beach, California. It's Sam's turn, first of all. Hi, Sam.
Hi, Sam. George, you just really hit it out of the park for me today with the perfect guest.
You always seem to...
Hi, doctor. I have Crohn's disease, and about 4 years ago, I had a pretty massive perforation, and I was knocked out for a month. And when I woke up, my legs were like asleep. And told them that, and I was immediately wheeled in, and they found a big blood clot. And so they got rid of that. It was from all that infection. I had like 6 liters in my belly. And so anyway, as it turns out, they got that done. The legs never really came back all the way. And they finally had me see a neurologist, and he just started really just, it hit me with a vitamin barrage, you know, of everything. I guess I had moderate motor and severe nerve damage to my legs. And I get Remicade every 6 weeks, and I've kind of insisted that they keep, so something in me told me to keep insisting that they give me the vitamins every time I get that. Right now, he's got me on 1 milligram of folic acid and taking a couple different Bs.
Mm-hmm. It's like a homocysteine.
I'm taking turmeric, thanks to George and his recommendation. I've been taking it for about a month now.
Well, let me comment if I could. It is Sam, correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
So what it sounds like, at least from what you're describing, is that they've told you you have nerve injury or neuropathy as a consequence of your severe flare-up of your inflammatory bowel disease, which is Crohn's disease. And, you know, again, I guess there should be a disclaimer here that because I'm not your doctor, but I would simply say that what you would want to discuss with your doctor would be a special type of vitamin B12, which we call methyl B12. That's methyl B12. Turns out that B12 is desperately important for regeneration of function and of nerves, of the peripheral nerves. And we will give about 5,000 micrograms of B12, which is 1 cc methyl B12, several times a week by injection. We actually teach our patients how to do that, along with a very unique nutritional supplement called alpha lipoic acid, which you probably are taking.
Yeah. What he did with that, it turns out I have a doctor that's Middle Eastern, but he hasn't been really inputting kind of his own influences. He had said basically the same kind of thing. He has me doing that that cobalt or whatever it is, the nasal spray once a week.
Yeah, the problem is that's cyanocobalamin, and that does have some cobalt in it, and that's why I'm not so excited about using it. The type of B12 I use, again, Sam, is methyl B12.
Okay.
There's no sense in checking your B12 level. Again, this was something you will discuss with your treating doctor, since that's not me.
Okay.
But if you were to check your B12 level after receiving these injections, it would be so-called off the chart. And what I tell my patients is that's a good place to be on B12, because we're not in the maintenance mentality here. We're in the repair mentality. So, again, you might discuss with your treating doctor significantly pushing that vitamin B12 and also adding in about 2,000 milligrams a day of alpha lipoic acid. Those are key players, along with DHA and omega-3 fat, in terms of nerve repair. So see how they work with that.
Okay, I will. Thank you so much for that info.
Sure. Thanks for your call, Sam.
Okay. Why do supplements help people so much?
Well, we're supplementally or nutritionally almost devoid in terms of the foods that are purveyed to Americans. What's in our food these days is just doesn't cover it in terms of the nutritional requirements
right.
of the human physiology. We often speak, not we, I say that parenthetically, of the minimum daily requirement of various vitamins. For example, the minimum daily requirement of vitamin C, around 60 milligrams a day. What that means is that's the absolute minimum below which you would get a disease. And in the case of vitamin C, you'd get scurvy. It means just the minimal amount you could take and not get scurvy. What we ought to be considering is the optimal daily requirement, or that amount of these nutrients that will provide a person with optimal health. And these numbers are typically many-fold larger than the minimum daily requirement.
Next up, we go to Jeff in Ontario in Canada on the international line. Hey, Jeff, go ahead.
Hello, yeah. I'm a long-time listener. And,
thank you.
This is awesome. I've stuttered for my entire life, and I'm not sure if it's genetic because my father also stutters, and my great-grandfather also did. Now, I had two questions. One is, what causes it? And number two is what can I take in order to make my brain make the speech work properly? I've tried speech therapy all throughout grade school, high school, and honestly, it's a joke. It wasn't until my late 20s that my speech started to straighten out, and I could actually say sentences without stuttering half as much as I used to, because I used to stutter so bad that I couldn't even ask for a bus transfer. You know?
Well, let me answer your first question. Clearly, there's a strong genetic component, because we do see while scientists have not specifically nailed down the exact so-called stuttering gene, you know, the pedigree analysis is clear that it's far more that there is a strong genetic component, and there's actually a predisposition for males to be affected more than females. But having said that, no one actually knows what causes stuttering, as I'm sure you've been told over the years. There are some cases when stuttering can be caused by some kind of stroke or brain injury, but those are extremely rare. There is a concept, what is called, well, most stuttering, you know, as in your case, is developmental, occurs in children, and oftentimes as a child matures, the stuttering seems to improve. There is a something called neurogenic stuttering, when the ability of you to actually control from your brain, choosing to control your lips and tongue, that action, those brain signals aren't working effectively, and that's what we call neurogenic, meaning coming from the brain, a type of stuttering. But I wish we could tell you we knew the cause of that, because that might pave the way for some, you know, effective kind of treatment.
It is a horrible, it's a horrible thing to go through, even as a child, you know, like, and even now, like, I've actually lost jobs because of stammering and stuttering, and there's certain words that I get stuck on, and my brain knows what it wants to say, but my mouth and vocal cords just don't want to cooperate. You know.
Well,
like,
I think that, you know, the main thing that stuttering is a social a stigma. There's no question about it. I mean, it doesn't mean anything else in terms of health, or in terms of intelligence, or in terms of any other issues with reference to brain function. But the problem is, of course, society doesn't fully get that, you know, and it's therefore, because of the society pressure, is then associated with low self-esteem, with feelings of anxiety, of being nervous, and, you know, this is the reason that stressful situations tend to exacerbate or make worse stuttering, because it makes a person feel more stigmatized. So I hope that information is helpful for you.
What kind of medications are good for the brain? What kind of medications are bad?
Well, oddly enough, though I don't really want to admit it, it turns out that the process of neurogenesis, or growing new brain cells, is actually stimulated by what are called the SSRI antidepressants, or the serotonin reuptake, you know, the very common descendants of Prozac, that you know, of which there are many now that physicians will utilize. You know, it turns out that these actually do stimulate the growth of new brain cells, and even to the extent that some scientists feel that their ability to help depression is in fact dependent on the growth of new brain cells. But that's not news. I mean, even lithium, which has been around for about 120 years, is actually known to stimulate the growth of new brain cells as well. But by and large, most other medications really are not good for the brain. But, you know, we always look at the risk-benefit ratio. I mean, certainly blood pressure medicines are not necessarily good for the brain in terms of the chemical itself, but we know that there's a huge upside to lowering the blood pressure in terms of that, in terms of the brain. So we always look at what's called the risk-benefit ratio.
Serotonin levels, if they're too low, does that mean you get depressed?
Well, isn't that simple? It turns out that these SSRI antidepressant medications, number one, have actually very little efficacy when it comes to treating depression, truth be known.
Yeah.
But number two, don't really have much of a role to play in changing the level of serotonin in the brain. If they did, by inhibiting the uptake of serotonin, then they would be effective almost immediately upon when you started them. But it turns out that it takes 6 to 8 weeks for these drugs to be effective. So there must be some other mechanism involved that would explain their effectiveness, which is minimal at best.
How do you increase serotonin naturally? Can you?
You can exercise. Physical exercise. We also know that the nutritional supplement DHA, or food added.
How about 5-HTP?
Well, 5-HTP, we know that the precursor to serotonin in terms of its metabolic pathway, in terms of how it's created, comes from tryptophan. And therefore, 5-hydroxytryptophan is a supplement that is purported to raise serotonin, or at least increase serotonin availability. And I think that to some degree it does do that.
That's why they call it a mood enhancer?
Well, it affects mood. It certainly can change mood, but it's serotonin is also something that allows people to relax. So we oftentimes will give, for example, L-tryptophan at nighttime and help people sleep, or favor foods that are rich in L-tryptophan, things like figs or milk or even turkey.
What is it about exercise that works, David? Is it the fact that it increases your blood flow?
Well, George, there are, probably several thousand parts of human physiology that are affected by exercise. Everything from altering brain chemistry to, in fact, altering blood flow, heart rate, cortisol level that you and I talked about a couple of hours ago. There's so many issues that are involved with exercise. Most importantly, I think that is just starting to come into the press, is the understanding that exercise is probably one of the most powerful epigenetic modulators. In other words, physical exercise is a key player in turning on healthful, health-giving, life-giving genes. So it's really something that I am such an advocate of, even in my 90-plus-year-old patients. But it's interesting. Most of the patients that I see who are already in their 90s and, have gotten that far have always adopted a pretty regular exercise program anyway. It's very rare that I'll see a person in their mid-90s who isn't an exerciser. And it's extremely rare to see a person that age who is overweight.
If you saw a young person who didn't exercise, would you conclude that as they got older, that they were headed down the wrong path?
It's actually a statement I probably give several times each week, and I absolutely can tell you I recall telling a patient just last week who I was seeing for a number of issues that his most life-threatening condition was his obesity. And it wasn't the fact that, he drank a little bit and then he had a little bit of high blood pressure on. I said, it's the obesity. And clearly, that is beyond just the individual patient. It's a societal issue, and it's huge, and it's in part responsible for this huge amount of monetary expenditure for healthcare in this country, which provides us, a health program that is lacking dramatically.
We're going to come back and take final phone calls with Dr. David Perlmutter, author of Power Up Your Brain, on Coast to Coast AM. Well, investigative mythologist William Henry, just back from Egypt. He was there during this entire mess. We'll be reporting on that, and will be our special guest on Coast to Coast on our Monday night program, so make sure you're part of it. And welcome back. We're going to take final phone calls with our special guest, Dr. David Perlmutter, and your calls. David, with the program you put together, Power Up Your Brain program, how did you put it together? What was it based on? Was it research? How did you know these supplements work, this works?
George, it's really a manifestation of doing this work for about 20 years. I've become a fellow of the American College of Nutrition, so as such...
That helps.
Yeah, it's kind of a unique position for a neurologist to be in, but it's really... And what we did in Power Up Your Brain is every recommendation is supported chapter and verse by the most up-to-date peer-reviewed references that document why these are our recommendations. And, it again gets back to the fact that nutrition can be our salvation in terms of health. The way things are practiced in this country, it's sort of like live your life come what may and then hope that there is a drug that's going to be able to pull you out of the pit. But in reality, preventive medicine is the key. John Kennedy said that the time to fix the roof is when the sun is shining, and that's really what it's all about, is let's let's get the barn door closed long before the cows are even waking up, and really create a brain program that creates a brain that not only is going to be resistant to disease in the long run, but will function more effectively even today. And boy, we can all use that.
Sure can. Let's go to Clovis, New Mexico. Troy's with us on Coast to Coast. Hey, Troy, go ahead.
Hi, George. It's really nice to talk to you guys. And by the way, your music tonight has been awesome.
Super. Thanks.
I have a question. I have a chronic degenerative neurological disease, RSD or CRPS, however you know it. And I was wondering, I have spinal column stimulators and a pain pump. I really don't like taking narcotics. And I was wondering, what supplements can I? I'm on B6, calcium, D with calcium. And I was wondering, what else can I do to? I know you said something about B3 and stuff like that.
Troy, let me just take a step back here, because our listeners may not be familiar what RSD stands for. So.
Right.
What Troy is describing is something called reflex sympathetic dystrophy, and it's actually an overactivity of a specific part of the nervous system that oftentimes leads to incapacitating pain in an extremity or in the neck, and oftentimes may lead even to deformity and even reabsorption of bone. By far and away, the thing that is most neglected, but nonetheless super powerful in dealing with RSD, is hyperbaric oxygen. So, Troy, what I would do if I were you immediately is start to Google RSD or put in the word reflex sympathetic dystrophy and put in hyperbaric oxygen, and you will see that this is an incredibly effective treatment for that problem. And, you know, there are hyperbaric centers around the country. I think you're in New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, and I happen to know that there are a couple of centers in New Mexico, but I would absolutely immediately get online and read about that, because it's extremely exciting. I mean, we've treated some people who were just devastated by this situation. I had one.
I don't wish it on anyone. I get treated by Dr. Rax over in Texas Tech.
Mm-hmm.
He's pretty well known, I guess.
Well, I would definitely look into hyperbarics. As I was saying, we did treat one young woman who was a hockey player, and her foot was so swollen from RSD, and the hyperbarics just turned her around. She went back to playing hockey. So I think of anything I could recommend for you, I would certainly look into that.
Can I ask one more thing real quick?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I know it's not up your alley and stuff. I'm not sure it may be. I've heard other guests talking about like the definition of chronic pain is having your electricity is off in your body. And I really took a lot of interest in your apple cider vinegar and taking sodium bicarbonate
mm-hmm.
to get your pH right and to get your body even keel, you know, clean all that stuff out, you know, get your body cleaned up. Do you think things like that would even help?
Well, again,
won't hurt, would it, David?
No, it certainly wouldn't hurt. But I think there is a very well-defined specific treatment for his problem, for your problem, Troy, that you've not explored yet. And I would absolutely tell you that you need to pay attention to that, because you know, all these other things that you're thinking of doing are interesting, but this is a way to cure the problem. This
yeah.
is a way to get to the
right.
actual nerve hyperactivity, you know, aside from having to do nerve blocks and stellate ganglion blocks and all the typical things that are done. So I would certainly look into that.
How do you find hyperbaric chambers in whatever city you're in? Call the hospital?
I mean, there are clearinghouses online where people can go and absolutely just put in their zip codes. And it'll show you where the closest chamber is to where you are. So it's very simple. There are chambers in every state.
Does insurance cover this?
Many times they do. For his type of problem, they would likely cover it, but of course he'd have to see what kind of coverage he has. So, reflex sympathetic dystrophy, hyperbarics is just the cat's meow. So.
All right, let's go to New Jersey. Regan's with us on Coast to Coast. Hi, Regan.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my call, gentlemen.
Sure thing.
May I ask two questions?
Yes, you may.
Okay. Okay. First question is: is there a difference in company brands when it comes to vitamins and nutrients? You know, like a store brand as opposed to a quality name brand. Is there a difference in the quality and the way your body can absorb it?
Absolutely, there may be. Yes.
You really want to get, if you can, it's called pharmaceutical grade. Is that correct, David? Is that better?
It is. I mean, there are times when
doesn't mean it's made by a pharmacy.
No, but I mean, it just means it's a higher level of standard. But the point is, there are, you know, clearly examples of claims made by vitamin manufacturers that really didn't substantiate what was actually in that pill. So there are some vitamin brands that are actually only available through professionals, through physicians, chiropractors, osteopaths, etc. And those lines, those companies that deal specifically through professionals are generally leaps and bounds far better products than ones you might get, for example, at a big box store.
Wow. Okay. And my second question is concerning a blood test. I want to get a blood test, and if I don't find anything, deficient in my blood at all, but I still want to take supplements, what's the best way to decide what I should take?
Well,
any suggestions on that?
I think first of all, it would be good to interact with a knowledgeable healthcare provider who understands supplements. Whereas, you know, the standard blood test that you would get from a typical doctor would have no bearing whatsoever in terms of identification of where your weaknesses may be from a supplement department. In the book, we actually talk about a specific test called a spectrocell analysis that actually gives you a readout of what your nutrient requirements are. And that's certainly not the only one available in America. There are various of these tests available, but your typical, what we call an SMA21 or the SMAC21 that your internist or family practitioner will do, will absolutely provide you no information whatsoever in terms of what vitamins or nutrients you might need.
Earlier you talked about the brain and DNA. Did you want to explain that again?
Well, you know, again, we are able now to understand that we can modulate, we can take control over DNA in the brain and regulate its expression to our advantage. We do that. The science that looks at that is called epigenetics. And again, many of the lifestyle issues and nutrients and foods that I talked about today that I've written about in Power Up Your Brain work on the basis of changing DNA, turning off genes that are not so good for us, and turning on genes that manufacture proteins that are antioxidant, that help reduce inflammation, that stimulate the growth of new brain cells, that stimulate the connection of brain cells. So, you know, again, that's a major thesis of Power Up Your Brain.
All right, let's go to Encino, California. Janine, you're with us. Hey, Janine, welcome to the program. You are up on Coast to Coast.
Hey, thank you very much.
Sure.
Let me give you a short little history so you can understand the question. My husband was bedridden ill for 10 years, and he got tired of hurting, and he killed himself.
Oh, gosh.
And after my being his caregiver for all that time and, you know, all that junk that happened, I ended up being diagnosed with major depression. So for about the last 20 years or so, I've been taking Prozac and anti-anxieties and pills like this,
mm-hmm.
and I'm really tired of it. Is there can the brain undo depression?
Yes, ma'am. Janine, it absolutely can. And, you know, that's really one of the major tenets of this new text that we're putting out, and that is how you can cause the brain, what you can do to affect the brain and get it to rewire itself to allow you to access areas of the brain that can bring you more happiness and joy. So, you know, I'm certainly not down on medication. As a matter of fact, you know, the medications that you have mentioned, at least one of them, as I indicated, actually has some very positive effects upon the brain.
Well, I went off of them for a little while, and I went down there, just down in the pits.
Yeah, and again, you might not be able to come off of them just yet, but here's the way to fill in the safety net. And that's what we wrote the book about. How do we distance ourselves from those memories that are dysfunctional sever those ties mentally to those dysfunctional previous experiences that are dragging you down, and establish through this process of brain plasticity, establish connections to those parts of the brain that can give you access to joy and happiness and compassion and empathy. So it's all possible to do. And so, take a deep breath and realize that there's absolutely hope for you.
Why does meditation seem to work or help the brain?
Well, again, it imparts upon the brain a lot of changes. It physically changes the brain and augments and turns on the functionality and even the size of those areas of the brain that are really important. For example, the hippocampus is enlarged. The memory center, the hippocampus, is enlarged in people who are chronic meditators. So, it's just like, why would running be good for your legs? Why is weightlifting good for your arms? And, why is aerobics good for your heart? Because you're exploiting. You're using that part of the body, and when you do, it increases in its functionality.
East of the Rockies, Rogers in Statesville, North Carolina. Hi, Roger. Go ahead. Raj? Well, he's not there anymore. Let's go to Bill, though, in Corning, California. Hi, Bill.
Hi, George. Good to talk to you again.
You too.
You have a really great show here. Doctor, I just wanted to ask you two questions, and that was Tourette syndrome. What are the neurological mechanisms, and can we see it in a scan when it's active? And also in schizophrenia, the voices seem so cruel to the sufferer. I mean, it is so condemning, and it's relentless. And I just wondered, do we know anything about the phenomenology of these voices? I mean, sometimes the patients lose their will to those voices, and it's almost like, where does the self go?
Right.
And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Okay.
Well, let me go to his first question, and that was in terms of the causes of Tourette syndrome. And I think...
And explain Tourette syndrome for us, if you
will. Well, Gilles de la Tourette actually was first to describe this malady in the 19th century, and it's characterized by... inappropriate motor activity. Now, typically, this motor activity can be in the form of twitching, but most of the time, what we see these days is or at least characterized most commonly by vocalization.
Vulgar words.
Well, that's called coprolalia,
okay.
The technical term for it, and I think that's pretty much the Hollywood. The Hollywood kind of understanding of what that's all about.
Yeah.
It's extremely rare, but far more common than that is simply grunting or clearing the throat, and it's actually very common. To be specific, one of the most common causes is actually the use of anti-ADHD drugs. It's a very common cause of Tourette syndrome, so much so that even in the physician's desk reference, or PDR, in bold letters, is listed that these drugs should be used with great caution in people who have a family history of Tourette syndrome or have had some issues with Tourette syndrome in the past. And unfortunately, the Tourette's that may be induced by giving kids these ADHD drugs may be permanent, according to the journal Neurology. So that being said, the second question is, what is the functional substrate? In other words, is there a specific part of the brain? And there have been some newer studies that have used a specific type of technology called functional MRI that has come up with some findings of a structural part. We understand that most commonly the areas of the brain that are involved in Tourette's may actually be what's called the frontal cortex. That's the area that's been sort of implicated in how we control regulate our thinking processes. So fMRI has been used, and these functional substrates have been demonstrated, and it's a big problem. And again, if prevention is so important, then I really think a message here is we've got to be so judicious about treating children with ADHD drugs, and I would urge people who are thinking about that maybe put in the name of your whatever the favorite ADHD drug is of the day and put in the word Tourette's on Google, and you'll see what I'm talking about.
True. He was also talking about the schizophrenia, all these voices people hear, some evil, some otherwise. How can that be cured?
Well, the good news about that, and that and there's really very little other than I would say that there have been just the development over the past several decades of just some really good pharmaceuticals to treat schizophrenia. It turns out that psychotherapy is interesting, but not very effective, that the modern antipsychotic medications have proven just incredibly valuable in dealing with that. So
there are some medicines that actually work.
Oh, absolutely. So, you know, tonight I think, you know, George, you and I have focused on broadening the boundaries of modern medicine by looking at nutrients, looking at modification of DNA expression,
exactly,
and the power of exercise and meditation. But, you know, certainly there are those entities for which pharmacology is certainly effective.
Absolutely. David, thank you for being on the program. Dr. David Perlmutter, his latest work, Power Up Your Brain. For Jason Bowers, Jason King, Dan Galanti, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.